Hey, welcome to the Josh Holiday Show podcast for Valentine's Day, everybody. Valentine's Day, are you excited? Yeah. I like to call it February 14th myself. And Love and Sex was on the cover of Now magazine, and I thought to myself, wow, two things lately I have very little connection to. And you could probably judge me by the fact that I'm doing a podcast on Valentine's Day. I guess it's a good barometer of what my my love life is like at present time. Although I should say I've just been so busy with a new job that I haven't really had time to actively pursue any kind of dating or romantic type activities. I've just been like crazy busy. I haven't had a 9-to-5-ish, 10-to-6-ish type job for quite some time. The last gig I had was hosting an afternoon radio show in Calgary, which ran from 2 till 7, which meant that I would get up in the morning and spend a few hours at my place preparing and picking out news and going over the day's events and stuff to talk about. Whereas now with this new gig, I get home and I'm all tired and I just pretty much want to relax and then go to bed. And I subscribe to the newspapers, but I have to kind of force myself when I get home or at some point to read them. And it makes it a little bit harder to put together the podcast because I'm like, oh, I got to keep up, got to have stuff to talk about. And last week I didn't do a podcast, though I set out to do one. I got about 12 minutes in, and I was talking about the circumstances surrounding the death of Brian Burke's son and how sad and how shocking and terrible that was. And I got to the end of sort of talking about that, and then I realized, well, you know what? Everything else I have to talk about, it seems so inconsequential in comparison that I don't think it made sense to you know, oh, I'm going to complain about this little thing when such a, you know, just in comparison, it seems so inconsequential. So I halted the recording and I just kind of erased it, and that was that. And we did a rerun on the talkradiox.com and on the podcast thing. Well, this is the newest, the latest one, unless, of course, you're coming to this late and you're listening to it now when there's already other episodes that I've done since this episode. It's so hard to keep track. So I'm not sure if you saw this news item. It was I meant to talk about it last week, so it's a carryover. The news story itself is probably about 2 weeks old. There was a dude who was kite surfing in Florida. If you're not familiar with kite surfing, it's sort of a surfboard. Your feet are strapped in, and you attach yourself to. It looks almost like if someone was paragliding, sort of a big parachute type kite type thing, and you can kind of go flying up into the air, and then you're surfing on the waves. It's a sport that I look at and I'm like, man, that would be kind of cool because I like flying and I like the water. But I'm sidetracking here. A dude was doing this sport and was attacked, not by just one shark, but a whole bunch of sharks attacked him, and he died as a result. And it's significant for a number of reasons. I guess first of all, shark attacks are pretty rare. They're a lot rarer than you would think, and especially in Florida. Shark attacks in Florida tend to be more small sharks, and a lot of times it's more cuts and skin being pulled off, not so much deadly shark attacks. And I think California tends to be a state that has more big great white sharks because of the seal populations, whereas Florida, not so much. You have your bull sharks, which are fairly big, but not the huge sharks. And it's also significant because normally it's a single shark attack and not a whole bunch of them attacking one thing. So significant in a number of ways. And I'm fascinated by sharks. I love Shark Week. I sometimes have to change my pants every day. I'm so excited watching the sharks on Shark Week. I've always been fascinated by great white sharks. I think it was Jaws that first did it for me, and also created an unnecessary fear of the water when I was younger. Even in lakes, I'd be like, oh my god, what if there's a shark? Or I even remember when I was young. Swimming pools, I'd be like, well, if, you know, I think it was a combination of Jaws and those James Bond movies where they had sharks and pools that made me fearful. Yeah, that's the kind of neurotic kid I was. And thank God that's over. I'm no longer neurotic. So, yeah, sharks. I'm also fascinated by snakes, big snakes, and the possibility of snakes killing people in the wild. Alligators and crocodiles. I was a huge fan of the crocodile hunter. I was just like, oh my god, I love this thing. And alligators, I'm totally fascinated with. My parents have a place in Florida, just a little place down there. My mom goes down for about 4 months a year, and my dad will go down, you know, a week here and there during those 4 months. And when I'm down there, I'm constantly aware of, like, oh, I hope I see an alligator here, because it really is such a common thing. Like you'll be driving around and there's a lake or whatever right next to a golf course or something. There's alligators kind of sunning himself. And I think for Floridians, it's just like, yeah, whatever. It's like seeing, a rabbit. It's so common. Whereas me, I'm like, oh my god, this is awesome. And I'm constantly on the lookout or trying to spot them and you know, go out for bike rides. There's a university, the Florida Gulf Coast University down there that has a big campus. And I remember going around there and then, you know, looking for alligators and seeing a few. The last two times I've been down there, this past January, this last month actually, excuse me, and last year, made the trek, about an hour and a half, 2 hour drive from where we are to Shark Valley Conservation Area, and it's called Shark Valley Conservation Area. There's nothing to do with sharks there. Excuse me. It's in the Everglades, right in the middle of the Everglades. And what it is, it's a national park. There's about a 15 mile roadway, asphalt covered road. It's about 15 feet across, and I say roadway, not there's cars allowed on it. It's not. It's just a national park. It's a trail, but it's a paved asphalt trail, and they do have a tram that takes people around the 15 mile loop. It goes way out, and then there's an observation tower, and then the loop comes around a different way. But last year went and was when we initially read about it. They said, oh, you'll see alligators right along the path, and I was kind of like, oh, that would be kind of cool. I might see some, and when we got there, every 50 feet, there's giant alligators laying, you know, across the pathway. So you're riding your bike and you're riding, you know, a foot away, 2 feet away from a giant alligator. And the alligators, they're, I guess, so used to seeing humans that they're just kind of like, whatever. It's like a sleeping dog. If you're kind of fussing around him, he'll kind of open one eye just to see that you're not up to no good. And the alligators are the same way. There's kind of like, oh, I don't see anything going on. This year when we went, I was with my friend Demi, and I said to her, this year I want to touch an alligator. And so I did. There was a little alligator, maybe like a foot long, and he was on a little rock. And I was like, okay, I'm going to touch him. And I just touched his tail, and then he went bloop, off into the water. And that was that. Later on in the path, just before we finished, there was a larger alligator who was kind of sitting out there. And I kind of came up behind him, and I was like, oh, I just want to touch a big alligator. But then he started doing the whole... They have this hissing thing, like a deep guttural... thing, and he was a little bit surly, so I decided that in the interest of my health that we would just keep going, and we did. So that's a shark. If you get the chance to go, if you're in Florida on basically on either coast, it's halfway between Naples on the Gulf Coast and, you know, Miami, Fort Lauderdale on the east coast of Florida, like if you go right across the Everglades, Shark Valley Conservation Area, you can rent bicycles, you can take bicycles, you can walk. Not only are there alligators, there's all kinds of amazing birds, just tons of turtles. It's just a really, really amazing bike ride. And if you're going to do it, here's the one thing I would suggest. If you go out to the tower and you're coming back, go back the same way you went out. The one side is pretty boring. It goes through a kind of a swampland where there's not a lot of wildlife. But on the way to the tower, on the one path, all kinds of wildlife. So that's my travel tip for you. But I was talking about the dude who was attacked by sharks. And the phrase shark attack, I've got a throaty. The phrase shark attack is maybe a misnomer, according to comedian Ian Edwards. How's that for a segue? Take a listen to this.
Good to be here. I'm from New York and shit, by way of Jamaica. I'm living out here in California. I like California, man. California's cool. You know what I like about California? The beach. The beach is off the fucking chain. It's incredible, but I get grief from my homeboys because I won't go in the water when we down by the beach. They be like, how come you don't go in the water? And I'm like, because I watch the news. Yo, I got sharks in these fucking waters. Are you on medication? The sand is fine for me. Remember that little girl like 2 years ago off the coast of Hawaii got her arm bitten off by a shark? Remember that shit? Remember how like she was like, she wasn't going to give up. She's like, I'm just going to recover from this. And after I recover from this, I'm going to surf again. I'm not going to let this stop me. Let me tell you something. If I play any game that causes me to lose an arm, the game wins. Hand down, the game fucking wins. You know, if I get shot on stage tonight, this is my last show. That's just how I get down. She went back and surfed again. So it was a shark, you know, it's like, this ain't Vegas. It's your last hand for real. This ain't chips. Can't afford to lose that. I can't believe a shark bit off my other arm. Well, bitch, how did you lose the first one? It just... Talk about shark attacks. Shark attacks never happen, man. Never happen. Shark attacks never happen. Let me explain to you why shark attack never happen. We live on the land. Sharks live in the water. If you get caught down there, you're trespassing. That's their fucking living room. That's, you know what I'm saying? That's the bottom line. You know what I'm saying? You never been in your living room chilling and a stranger just walks in front of your TV. You know this motherfucker? I know him either. Get the gun. Whatever you do to that person, it's not an attack. That's a warranted ass whooping. You know what a real shark attack is? A real shark attack is if you're somewhere you're supposed to be and a shark shows up. That's a fucking shark attack. Like, if you leave here tonight, you go to your crib, you're taking a shower. You feel a tap on your shoulder. And you turn around. What's up, player? Shark attack time. Yeah, man. Don't worry about how I got in your tub, dog. That's like the least of your problems right now. I need to see them arms and legs. That's what the team is. That's a shark attack. You walking down dark-ass Bronson to get your car tonight. And a shark jumps out of nowhere. What's up, player? Shark attack time. Oh, snap. Great White, what are you doing hanging out on Bronson? Man, I saw you going by. I was like, oh shit, there goes my nigga right there. Let me holler. You know what? I apologize for using the N-word because I'm a Great White and I don't want this. I don't want this to go down as a racial eating. This has nothing to do with your color. I'm just straight up hungry and you happened along. That's a shark attack. All right, so I gotta tell you what happened to me today. So I'm in Urban Outfitters, right? I mean, and I see this one Asian lady ask this other Asian lady. She went up to me and said, excuse me, are you Korean? And she was like, no, I'm Filipino. And I was like, oh shit, they don't know either. I was like, god damn. All this fucking time, I thought they could tell the difference. It's just... all this pressure was just suddenly lifted. I don't have to guess right anymore. I just call them everybody Chinese. But I understand the plight of Asian people, because I hate when people, you know, white people use the word African-American. I hate that word. I was black for a long fucking time. And then one morning I woke up and all of a sudden we African-American. Like, who changed that shit? That's like 5 extra syllables. If you have to go out of your way to not sound racist, then you're fucking racist. You know what I'm saying? You should be comfortable enough to say black. Every time a white person called me African-American, I said, hold up, did you almost just call me nigga? Is that what the fuck? The fuck you want to say? Huh? Is that the fucking problem here? Is that the deal? Just trying to figure out what's going on. I'm getting into trouble, man. But I love women, though. I think my favorite type of women is mixed-race girls. I love mixed-race girls. Some in the crowd. No. See me after the show. No? Okay, just fooled me. See how cruel women are? See what I'm talking about? Got my hopes up this high in this amount of time. I like mixed-race girls. You know why? Because it don't matter who the parents are. It could be they're never ugly. It could be the 2 ugliest people from each race as the parents. That daughter is always fine as shit. Am I bullshitting? They're just always incredible. It don't matter who the parents are. You'll be looking at them in disbelief like, oh my gosh, you are incredible. You mean to tell me Rosie O'Donnell and Flavor Flav are your parents? That's incredible. And this is your homegirl? Wow, you are fucking incredible too. You mean to tell me Seal and Phyllis Diller are you? Just never seen anything like this. And wow, you got to be the baddest one of them all. You are preposterously fine. That's how fine you are. It's preposterous. You mean to tell me Smeagol from Lord of the Rings and Condoleezza Rice are your parents? And some people get mad when you call Condoleezza Rice ugly, but there's scientific proof to prove that Condoleezza Rice is ugly. Let me break it down for you. If Halle Berry was the Secretary of State, everybody in here would be like, man, she slept her way to the top. But Condoleezza Rice walks in the room like, that bitch is smart. Fucking genius.
That is comedy from a very funny Ian Edwards. I'm Josh. I'm so used to regular radio where you have to constantly remind people who you are and what station they're listening to, because it's based on flipping around the radio in their car and you want them to remember what they listen to. The podcast, you have made a choice to tune in to this show. You might even have downloaded it. Although the show does debut Sunday nights at 9 on talkradiox.com. So if you happen to be flipping around the internet with your button that flips around from never mind. I've got to take a moment here to talk about pancakes and waffles. I know I talk about all the serious topics, and this is not an exception to the rule. I went for pancakes. There's a restaurant called Fresh. There's a couple of them in Toronto, and I went to one this weekend. because they have pancakes there that are outstanding. Fresh is sort of most of their food is kind of either organic or natural or vegan or all that kind of stuff. So these pancakes are all natural, and each one weighs, you know, it's almost like a rock. But when you eat it, they have real maple syrup, and it's so good. So very, very good. The one thing I want to talk about is maple syrup, because they do have real maple syrup there and plenty of it. There are other restaurants that serve waffles, that serve pancakes, serve crepes, stuff that you would put maple syrup on, yet these restaurants don't have real maple syrup. It's table syrup, as they like to call it. It's just some kind of sugary blah syrup. And I think as Canadians, there should be some kind of law. I know people are like, oh, we don't need any more laws. This should be a law, or it should be part of the health code, that if you're a restaurant and you're a Canadian restaurant and you're serving pancakes or waffles, you must by law offer real maple syrup, and not just like a little shot glass full. However much it takes, it gets out on the table, and it's real maple syrup. All right, there. I put that out there. I've issued the challenge. Now step up, restaurants, and get some real maple syrup, and join me for pancakes at Fresh. Did you watch the Olympic ceremonies, the opening ceremonies of the 2010 Winter Olympic Games in Vancouver? I did. I guess I'm not alone. I think I saw a figure of, I think 33 million was the figure I saw. So a couple people did watch the presentation, and I did as well. I've got to say, I over the last couple of weeks, both on Sportsnet and on CTV, whenever I'm watching programs there, I've kind of grown tired of the endless self-promotion and the endless, like, hey, we got the games, particularly the one commercial with that singer, the young singer girl. She's singing I Believe, and there's all these montages, and they show her singing again. That was sort of nauseating, and I actually had, after that one came on, I had to get out a spatula, a scraper, and scrape the cheese off of the screen of my TV. That's how cheesy that was. Let's talk about the ceremony itself. I thought that the visuals were the coolest part of the event, the special effects and the visual effects. I thought that was really, really well done, pretty spectacular. The ice penises, that was pretty hilarious. The native people came out, and then these giant, what I guess were supposed to be totems, came out of the ground, but they did look like giant ice cocks. Musically, I was a little disappointed, especially with the lip syncing. It was so blatantly obvious and not live. It was really frustrating. The first time it seemed so blatant was with that Nikki, whatever her name is, Yanofsky, the same girl from the Believe commercials, just lip syncing away. Same thing with Bryan Adams and Nelly Furtado. You could tell Bryan Adams didn't have the mic in his mouth, and then he was singing. It was just really, really bad. And every time they cut to one of the lip-synced performances, the sound changed. It sounded very, very compressed and not lively at all. Exceptions to the rule, I don't think Katie Lang lip-synced. If she did, she should win an award for lip-syncing. She's a master of it, but I'm pretty sure she was live, and I think that's part of the reason she had a mic that was wired. And I think Sarah McLachlan was also live, and I don't think it's a coincidence that those performances kind of stuck out as, okay, those are actually interesting. Even some of the violins, the fiddlers, I'm not an expert on violins. I've seen one or two, and I've violins. We've all seen them, and I'm pretty sure they don't have lips. But there was violin syncing, the lip syncing with violins. So violin, maybe they have hidden lips. But there's the guy who came down in the canoe in front of the moon with the weird bat head hair. I don't know what was going on there. I don't know the significance. He was clearly playing to a track. It wasn't what he was playing wasn't matching up with what we were hearing. And even some of the tap dancing was pre-recorded tapping. The exception being with the one guy who came out and did the big solo thing. That you could hear it was mic'd, and I don't think you could get away with having close-ups and tapping and not have it live. I think Ashley McIsaac's violin performance, I think that was live. But yeah, just I think the magic of a live event is the fact that something could go wrong or everything's live. You know, there might be a note off or whatever. By having everything lip synced, it loses the edge, the energy. It's just like I don't know. And in terms of the actual ceremony itself, again, I really like the technical aspects of it, but I really thought it looked like a giant like Heritage Canada presentation, like something that the government would put together to show, hey, look at our heritage, look at the history of Canada. Didn't really represent the excitement and technology and newness and creativity of Canada so much as like, oh, look, yeah, we came from natives as a native people. No disrespect meant, but I don't know. It just didn't connect on that way, and it seemed kind of low energy. And then the dancers from Alberta with the low-key Sarah McLachlan thing, it just didn't have like that a real dynamic energy. It seemed more of a passive thing than an actual, you know, boom, exciting thing. And then there was that the weird opera singer lady. That was, I don't know, it was long. And the whole royal box thing. Just so elitist, having this box with the governor general and all the Olympic people. And everyone seemed kind of just, obviously there were people there who were like, okay, that you recognize the, you know, the prime minister's there and different officials, but there are other people who are like, well, why is that girl there? Is she someone's daughter who happened to get a pass? And they kept focusing on that box, and it's like, that's such a throwback to, you know, royalty or you know, the box at the gladiators in the Colosseum, like, oh, I'm the king, thumbs up. Why could you give these people good seats? Don't build a giant fucking box for them. Just have a section with good seats of good sight lines and put them there. It just struck me as like, oh, hello, we're up here. Yeah, I didn't like that aspect at all. And all kinds of speculation about who's gonna carry the torch, who's gonna bring it into the stadium. And as soon as Rick Hansen came up the ramp on the wheelchair there, I was like, ah, that's perfect. That's the guy. Giant advocate for the disabled. He's also a Paralympic winner, and he sort of carried on Terry Fox's tradition. So he seemed like a perfect guy for the gig. Although then it turned out that it was him and Gretzky and Nancy Green and Steve Nash, which I thought was okay, you know, recognizing the different sports. And then there was the Spinal Tap moment where one of the torch legs didn't come up. And it reminded me of a scene from Spinal Tap where the pod won't open. But it really didn't. It wasn't a huge deal. So then they light the torch, but that's not it. And that's just the torch in the arena. The real torch is down the road, and we're going to drive in the back of a pickup truck with a bunch of screaming, drunken yahoos running alongside the truck like kids following an ice cream truck. It was kind of anticlimactic, if you will. But I don't know. I love the technology and the cool lighting and that type of thing, but a little bit too Canadian heritage for me, and so that's what I felt. And obviously that day marred by the death of a Georgian loser, which I don't know if you saw the video, but it's really disturbing and wow, yeah, it's such a weird confluence of events where, you know, it's the opening ceremonies, everyone's excited, and then the very same day someone loses their life in pursuit of their dream. So that was too bad. And the only Olympian I know, so I actually know an Olympian who's participating in the Olympics, is a female luger, Alex Goff, who in her last event was fourth in the World Cup. So there's some expectations there. And go, Alex. But also some concerns. As soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, boy, I hope, can't imagine, you know, the other athletes, what's going through their minds in terms of trying to focus on getting down the hill, but also dealing with someone who's died on the very course that you're going to go down. And I'm super excited for Olympic hockey. Anytime you have, when we've had the World Cup in the past where they've let the NHLers go and the Olympics where the NHLers go, it's just great, great hockey. Everyone, you talk about the Stanley Cup where you have two good teams, but not everyone on the team. There's role players and there's you know, it's different people on the two teams in the Stanley Cup, not all stars. Whereas in the Olympics, you have the best players in the world on each team. So each team is an all-star team, and it's not like the NHL all-star game where there's no hitting or no one really gives a shit if they get a goal or if they get scored on. It's just kind of like, eh, yeah, I'm not going to, you know, it's just an all-star game. We're just playing here. Whereas here, it's an all-star game. These players are fighting for their country, fighting for their country's pride. It's all, they just go at it full force, and it's such good hockey. And this year, it's an anyone could win situation. I think that the favorites, the three favorites that I think of, Canada probably has the best all-around depth of roster. You know, we have some great snipers. We have some good role play. It's just a really deep, well-rounded team with a decent goaltending. Although Martin Brodeur has struggled over the last few weeks. Last night was pulled in the game against Carolina, the second worst team in the Eastern Conference behind my Leafs. ahead of my Leafs. goaltending could be huge, especially for the U.S. team. U.S. team not quite as deep as Canada, but they have perhaps the best goaltending in the tourney, especially if Ryan Miller's on his game. And in this type of situation, it's not a seven-game series. A lot of it's just, you know, one game decides a lot of things. So if a goalie can steal one game for you, it could mean the difference between gold, silver, or bronze. And Russia should be an interesting team as well. They've got some of the biggest superstar snipers in the world. Although something that they did is kind of interesting is there were some Russian NHLers that weren't invited to be on the Olympic team. Instead, they put a whole bunch of people from the KHL, the Russian hockey league, that's trying to make a run or take a run at the NHL. They put them on the roster, and I don't know if that's going to end up biting them in the butt or not. But I'm really looking forward to the Olympic hockey. It's awesome. Okay, let's talk about man. So much talking. let's talk about celebrity obsession. I'll give you a little backstory here. I recently met a girl through a friend who's moved to Toronto from Edmonton. So I guess that maybe there's a little bit of like, well, big city, you know. But this girl seems to have a weird obsession with celebrity. On her profile page on Facebook, there's a picture of her with Bono holding her hand and kind of leering at her in a creepy Bono way, in a creepy 60-year-old guy looking at a mid-20s girl way. And if you've listened to this podcast in the past or my radio show, you know that I consider Bono to be a giant hypocritical douchebag, and I'll give you a quick, I'll summarize basically for you. Bono is all about talking to world leaders and trying to have third world debt forgiven and leading all these different causes. And back in Ireland, U2 is probably one of the most, the biggest money-making companies or corporations, if you will, in all of Ireland. And basically governments, if they're going to forgive third world debt or help with poverty or help with AIDS or help with social programs, that money comes from taxes and from the taxpayers. And Bono was saying, do all these social things, do, you know, help the poor, help the people with AIDS, all these things that rely on a lot of taxpayer money. U2 has taken themselves as a company and moved it out of Ireland and headquartered it in some offshore place where they don't have to pay a lot of taxes. So none of the taxes that they, none of the taxes from the huge amounts of money that they make, millions and millions and millions and millions and millions and millions, so much money. They don't pay taxes in Ireland. They want to pay less taxes. So how much money do you need, Bono? You are a hypocritical douchebag, and it's really frustrating. Another thing, too, is his involvement with the Red campaign. He was a big part of that. They spent over $100 million marketing the Red campaign, and the campaign itself made about $18 million. So with the loss there, what is that, 82? I'm no mathematician, but I can subtract. Anyway, so I told her, well, listen to my podcast and let me know what you think. And then she did. And I said, well, what do you think? She said, well, I don't want to argue. I don't want to, you know. So I don't know that – I think it was challenging to her, but she's not willing to say, well, yeah, you're right. This guy is kind of a douche. She has this idolatry about Bono, and it's just weird. So I was on the Facebook, and she had all kinds of pictures of – her standing beside different celebrities, your George Clooney's, musician type people. And so I texted or Facebook messaged. I said, so what are your thoughts on celebrity? Just kind of floating that out there. And she said, well, you know, I admire a lot of people and obviously people shouldn't be stalk celebrities and shouldn't be. And I said, okay. And then she said, oh, you know, and then she wrote back and said, well, I think she sensed that I saw all her pictures. And she said, well, if you have a chance to meet someone you idolize, why wouldn't you? And I thought, okay, maybe that makes a little bit of sense. And I said, well, how many people do you idolize? Because on her Facebook, there's about 50 pictures of her with different celebrities. And I've never understand that notion of going where a celebrity is going to be, coming out of a restaurant or going to a movie and trying to be a part of that, trying to get a piece of this person, trying to get a picture standing next to them or get an autograph. I've just never really understood that idea of being, I don't know what one gets out of that. I've been in the industry for quite a long time in terms of, you know, acting and radio and stuff. And so as part of that, I've met tons of what you would call famous people, musicians, actors, directors, that type of thing. And I've never really felt starstruck. I've always just been like, oh, hey, how's it going? You're a person. I'm a person. We have different jobs. That's all it is. I'm really talented in some areas. You're talented in other areas. And in some cases, you're not that talented. You've just sort of become famous for whatever reason. And I think of it also in terms of, well, I'll give you an example. One person who I totally idolized and was in awe of when I was younger was David Cronenberg. I think he's a fantastic director. I loved his movies, and I wanted to be a director. I wanted to be David Cronenberg. And I had a chance to meet him because I was doing some work when I was in university. Doing some volunteer work with the Genie Awards, the Canadian Film Awards, and I was in charge of wrangling the green room area and kind of making sure people were there to go and present and that type of thing. And David Cronenberg was there, and I was just kind of – I had no desire to go and get an autograph or a piece of something or whatever. I didn't know what to say. I was just sort of like, you know, the one time I get tongue-tied – and so I basically just wanted to say, yeah, I really like your work. And he's like, oh, thanks. And I think he sensed that I was like crazy nervous. So that was that. And then he presented an award for best director. And then I actually passed him in a hallway. He was headed back to the audience and I was heading back the other way. And he just handed me this envelope thing. And I was like, all right, I guess he wants me to kind of toss it or whatever. And then later I'm like, oh, that's the actual envelope that he took out on stage with the winner in it. And on the front it had typed David Cronenberg. On the inside there was a card that said Denny Arcan, Jesus of Montreal, who won. So it was basically the envelope. So I thought that was a really, really nice gesture. And But that was that. And, you know, and other times, a big, huge fan of New Order when I was a young guy. That was a band I was like, favorite all-time band, and then got the chance to sort of sit right next to Bernard Sumner in the radio studio. I was like, just, you know, but not, never at any point did I, have I been the kind of guy who, oh, I want to get an autograph, I want to get a picture with this person, I want to be validated. I just don't get that. And I think Steve Martin, there's this story of what he used to do, and I'm going to paraphrase here because I don't know exactly what was written, but he would carry with him business cards that if someone came up to him and said, oh, can I have your autograph? Can I, you know, instead of signing an autograph and giving it to them, he would give them one of these cards that said, this is to certify that I've met Steve Martin and he was a polite and friendly guy. I'm paraphrasing, but that's the basics of what he did. I thought, well, that's great. That's because that's all, I don't know if that's all people want. Like what? I don't get it. People in music or people in film or actors, they might have a certain amount of talent in that area, but they're no more superior than someone who's a good teacher or someone who's a plumber, an accountant, a bus. I really, really don't get that putting these people up on a pedestal, actors and actresses. And it really baffles me. I guess there's a culture of like TMZ and Us magazine and to more of a degree lately, it's these people who aren't even that particularly talented. You got your, you know, people from reality shows and The Hills and I guess Paris Hilton was one of the turning points where she really is dumb, slutty, and has no discernible talent. She's hugely famous. I don't understand that, the culture of celebrity. And the girl who I was talking about initially, she's interested in her, fancies herself an actress, and that adds a whole other dimension to it. If you want to be in the industry as an actor or actress, you can't be the fan, like, oh my God, that's someone who's your colleague. You're in the same business. It's not someone who you put up on a pedestal. If you want to be a serious actor or actress, there's no, you don't, aren't celebrity crazed. You're a professional, and that's that. You're in the same business. You do the same thing. They've had more success at it. You're still working on it. It's really, really weird. And there's another, side note, there's another girl who I know, who's got to have some kind of daddy issues, because she also has celebrity obsessions, but it's all kind of bad boy / creepo obsession. You know, the dude from Lucas Rossi, I guess he was the rock star Supernova guy. Ugh. She was like desperate to meet him. Britney Spears, she idolized and defended to the end. Not that she's dead. Tommy Lee, Adam Lambert, that AJ guy from Backstreet Boys who I guess came through Calgary, and his pictures, and it's like, your whole head looks like a venereal disease. It was like just creepo McGinty is what I would call that guy. I just, yeah, I don't understand it. And it's maybe it's a disease. All right, there we go. I was reading the newspapers, as I'm wont to do. This was in the Now or the Eye, the local entertainment magazine. And there was an ad for the Indie Awards presented by one of the satellite radio companies. And I thought, oh, cool. This is, you know, rather than the Junos that celebrate all the shitty mainstream bands that the record companies are foisting on people, here's one that celebrates independence and people who are working to make interesting artistic music and not just trying to, you know, get radio play. But there were some things that stuck out, and mostly by a few bands that have one thing in common. They're on a record label called 604. 604, the main area code in Vancouver, but also the record label that was started by Chad Kruger from Nickelback. And he's not signing bands that are interesting or artistic. He's signing bands that make the same kind of shitty mook rock that Nickelback makes. Just bullshitty, just not smart, mainstream, trying to get on the radio type music. And some of the bands, I should mention, Faber Drive, Mariana's Trench, Theory of a Bad Band. I don't understand why these bands find themselves among the nominees in the Indie Awards, because it's almost an insult to the awards, especially if they win. It tarnishes the awards for bands that are making interesting, real, intelligent music. So that's how I feel about that. Hoo-wee. Yabba, yabba, yabba. Movies. Let's talk about movies quickly. At the end of the year, I did a top 10 list with a bit of a disclaimer that some of the movies I hadn't seen and had yet to see. I've talked about Up in the Air since then and said, wow, it's one of my favorite movies of the year. And then I was listening to Dan's show here on talkradiox.com, and I was reminded of Moon. If you didn't see Moon, it's a really, really... when I was reminded, I was like, oh, yeah, that was a really good movie. It's directed by David Bowie's son, and it's a sci-fi movie. But it's a very low-key, kind of thoughtful intelligence. Not like a lot of special effects or anything. It's more of a thinking man sci-fi movie. And it really, really gets your mind moving, and it's a challenging movie, but really, really entertaining, and just a really, really great movie. So that's one I would add to my top 10, making it a top 11, maybe. Up in the Air, I guess 12. Let's just say there's more movies out there that I can recommend. And then recently I was at a double feature at the Bloor Cinema. An interesting double feature in that the first movie, parents were there with their kids and were enjoying it. The second movie, no kids and no surprise. The first movie was The Fantastic Mr. Fox, featuring the voice of George Clooney as the Fantastic Mr. Fox, but a stop motion animated movie, which is hugely laborious, but the results are really, really interesting and fun to watch. There's a real dimension to it that you don't get with straight up animation, and really, really well done. And it's multi-leveled, so the kids can watch it and they'll enjoy it, but as adults you can watch it and there's stuff that kids wouldn't get but that are really, really funny. It's just a really entertaining movie. They swear in it, sort of. Every time there would be a swear word, they say, oh, get the cuss word out of here, cuss word. It's a lot of fun. Fantastic Mr. Fox. Check it out if you get the chance. The second movie on the double bill, not a kids movie, Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. If you saw the original Bad Lieutenant, I guess the most famous scene is Harvey Keitel stopping these girls on the road and making them do bad things to him. I saw the trailer for this one before another movie, and I thought, oh, this is going to be the worst movie ever. The trailer made it look like it was so cheeseball-erific that I was like, oh, this can't be good. But then I saw reviews, and I was like, wow, people are giving it decent reviews. What's the story? And as part of a double feature, you can't go wrong with some cheap movies. And it was a surprise. Out of context, the trailer does seem cheesy, but the whole movie has a bit of a tongue-in-cheekness to it that it's so over-the-top. It's sort of funny, but it's really, really a really, really entertaining movie. Nicolas Cage is actually quite good in it. Val Kilmer is the second creepiest guy, so that gives you an idea of the kind of movie it is. It's really entertaining. Bad Lieutenant. I would say go and see Bad Lieutenant. You know what? I'll play a quick bit of comedy. I like this one. It's from Comedy Death Ray. And it's Andy Daly basically deconstructing hack comedy and comedy itself without even telling any real jokes. I won't deconstruct it any further. You'll get the idea by listening. Here it is. Enjoy.
How's everybody doing tonight? I gotta tell you, I don't know, you know. All this stuff that's going on in the world today, it's like, hello. I mean, come on, it's like, hey, wait a minute, excuse me, I didn't sign off on that. I mean, seriously. I mean, come on, if that's the way it's going to be, no thank you. I mean, really, seriously, it's like, you got to be kidding me. Give me a break. I mean, it's really nuts. You got guys over here going, hey, check it out, you know, and... guy's over here going, hey, what do you think, you know? And here I am going, whoa, 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 whoa! Knock it off! I mean, you gotta be kidding me. At this point, it's like, okay, enough. Thank you very much, but no thank you, okay? I mean, Siri, where is it written? Where is it written that that's how it's gonna be, you know? Where is it written? Because I didn't get that memo. I didn't get that. I didn't get a look at that one. Jesus Christ. Married people here tonight? Married people, yeah. All right. Well, this is nuts. True story. A couple of weeks ago, you know, I'm just hanging out, just doing my thing, you know. Next thing I know, it's like, hey, I got an idea. What am I supposed to do in that situation? It's like, I don't got enough problems, and now this? You gotta be kidding me. It's like, at this point, I'm like, okay, whatever, you know. I mean, seriously, do I have a sign on my back? You know what I mean? It's ridiculous. Oh my God, did you see this? This jerk going, hey, here's the deal, you know? Okay, I got an idea. I got an idea. Knock it off! How about that? Why don't you try knock it off? What else is going on? About you guys, but I don't like to go to those types of places, you know, if I can help it. If I can help it, you know. A couple of weeks ago, I'm hanging out, guy says to me, come on, you know. And I'm like, oh, for crying out, fine, okay. So I'm there, you know, just doing my thing, you know. No big deal. Next thing I know, it's like, hey, sir, sorry, but you know how it is. You fucking, what is it, 1991? I mean, come on! It's 2006 and this kind of crap is going on? Give me a break! Come on! For crying out loud, it's crazy! Jesus Christ!
That is a comedy from Andy Daly. Pretty funny stuff. It is Josh Holiday, and if you want to get in touch, I welcome emails. You can go to my website, joshholidayshow.com. If you have show ideas or you want to talk about something or you want to be interviewed or whatever you want to do, you want to be my Valentine, you can do that as well. Joshholidayshow.com. Thank you very much for listening, and I will talk to you again very soon.
I'm gonna do it, who the man, I'm gonna do it, who the man, set the cost all accounts. I'm gonna do it, who the man, I'm gonna do it, who the man,